And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hirsch, fresh upstairs from dodging all the Fair November people downstairs. That's quite the horror, eh? It's like only the first day, and it's mayhem down there. Mayhem in the UC today, folks. A live report.
It's not as mayhem as it will be on Saturday.
Mahamic. That's not even a word.
Mahamic.
Mahamic.
Oh, man.
That's Gaelic for mayhem. No, I don't know.
Making up words is a good place to lead off on this
mayhemic.
Week.
Yes.
Open Sources is CFRU's political current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel or subscribe through iTunes. Today, we will discuss the federal conservative leadership campaign, which seems to have gone off the rails thanks to Kelly Leach embracing Trumpism wholeheartedly. And predictably, it has kind of blown up in her face, so we will catch up with the Tories and see if they've found that unity and new direction they've been looking for. And then Alberta is also having its own conservative leadership issues, as Jason Kenney makes it clear he's the only guy that can lead the Alberta Tories out of the wilderness, or is that Wild Rose? But it seems like he's going to be doing it through intimidation and overwhelming establishment creds, and so what could possibly go wrong? And then finally, and this is kind of scary for me, the police might be listening to us talk right now, and I don't mean over the radio, but seven Montreal journalists, maybe even eight now, got a rude wake-up call in the last couple of weeks that the Quebec Provincial Police and the Montreal Police have been tapping their phones. Outrage was immediate, but is it appropriate, and what other things might the police departments be up to in terms of following journalists? And I don't mean on Twitter. But first, we have another leadership matter to contend with, and it is of the left-wing variety. The federal NDP are presently without a permanent leader. Tom Mulcair is the temporary leader, and he will remain leader until sometime later next year when the NDP have their leadership convention and elect someone new. Progress on that front seems to be slow, though, in terms of getting the race going. There was one person who put their name forward, Sherry DeNovo. She has since withdrawn her name, citing health issues. So we're trying to figure out what's the deal. And Scotty and I, neither of us are NDP supporters. We are cynical independents. I think that is our party.
The CIP.
So we decided to reach out to someone who has NDP creds, and we have in studio with us Shane Ward, who is presently with Plastic Free Guelph and has been a NDP supporter of the past and has worked locally with the local party trying to get various NDP candidates elected. So, Shane, thank you so much for joining us today.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
So what's the deal?
What's the deal? Well, you know, I think when we kind of talk on broad terms about the leadership contest, you know, we're still 11 months away within the federal NDP from actually hosting our elections. You know, in kind of more modern terms, you know, Justin Trudeau did platform for a while saying that he was not going to seek the leadership for the Liberal Party. And 6 months before their nominations or before their elections, he ended up putting his name into the pot and, you know, more or less became the Prime Minister of Canada. So I think it's kind of shooting the gun right now, saying that the NDP is kind of taking time with this. I think we are still building from the last election. There are a lot of very key issues that are very progressive that the NDP does stand on that I think we're still trying to push. And also keeping in mind that leadership races are very, very big things to partake in. Within the NDP, it does cost about $30,000 for a member to put their name in as the leadership. You know, we're talking about families and dealing with also the constituencies as well. It's a big thing. When you're electing on a platform of being an MP, you're basically trying to swing one constituency, whereas if you're going for a leadership race, you are looking at the entire party and every single person who's registered to the party. So, yeah.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, it just seems, well, not odd, but the Conservatives are like climbing over each other, and a lot of, let's say, minor players. But, you know, I would say maybe, what, a third? Not quite a third, but it's 12 declared, and there's other people like, oh, I might get in on this too.
Yeah.
But from what we've seen with NDP so far, Peter Julian is a maybe. It almost seems everybody is a maybe, and you would hope that somebody at least soonish would commit, right? Yeah. Is there anything up in the in?
Well, and
give
I mean,
us the good rumors.
And I mean, kind of talking on the conservative base, their leadership race is in May 2017. So, you know, very close. We've only got, what, 6 months between now and then.
Is NDP's in July? Have I got that right?
It's in October.
October, okay.
So it has to be held anywhere between October 1st and I believe October 29th, 2017.
So it is almost a year, really.
Yeah. So, you know, we've got about 11 months, a little over 11 months to kind of look into that. I think, you know, there have been a lot of names that have been thrown up into the air. We've definitely seen Jagmeet Singh, the MPP, who you know could really take on the role. He's currently serving as the deputy leader of the Ontario New Democrats. He's also serving actually as the first turban Sikh in Ontario. So it's kind of interesting seeing that again with the progressivism that we have within the NDP. You know, Jagmeet's obviously, he's been a leader for auto insurance rates and precarious employment conditions that have been created by temporary employment establishments. Another person to really keep the eye on is Nikki Ashton. We've actually seen her very, very climbing up the ropes lately with that. You know, she's been an MP since 2008 and has been very vocal on Aboriginal affairs, women issues, post-secondary education and youth. Lately, we've actually seen her touring the country kind of starting the conversation around precarious employment with youth. So it's very interesting to see that. Peter Julian, as you said, I believe a few weeks ago, he actually just did mention that he was interested in seeking leadership.
But
he stepped down as house leader. Yeah,
he stepped down as house leader. But again, you know, he's done amazing work with the green energy sector and trying to promote clean, renewable energy. As well as serving as the critic for energy and natural resources. So it'll be interesting to see him kind of come up to the spotlight and hopefully, you know, put his name in. He does have like a very, very big resume going for him as well. He's done a lot of really great work in House of Commons.
Same would go for Charlie Angus, probably, whose name keeps getting floated.
Yeah, and actually, that was my next one.
Was
that
it?
Charlie Angus, incredible. I actually met him here last year on campus, kind of while we were gearing up for the federal elections. He's done amazing work fighting for equal rights for First Nations, especially with the Attawapiskat. He's really brought to light a lot of the issues surrounding First Nations in not only Ontario, but the country itself. I mean, you know, we have, and I guess this is me being an NDP supporter, we currently have a Liberal government that has pledged on bringing in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission to fix some of these Indigenous issues. And, you know, to date, we haven't really seen much progress on that, along with a lot of the platforms that the Liberals platformed on. You know, one of the biggest things that I've been looking at was the ban on men who've had sex with men, blood donations. The Liberals campaigned on removing that completely, and just this August lowered it down to 1 year. I did start a House of Commons petition, E-423. It has closed for signing, has been read on the floor by Don Davies, who is you know, very good on challenging the health portfolio. He's also working on a campaign to there was another petition that it came through on basically for-profit plasma donations, which is becoming an up-and-coming issue. But you know, there's a lot of things that we've seen over the last year that I think that the Liberal government has had a big opportunity to kind of change a lot of these things, but they haven't. And I think that's kind of where we see this repression of the NDP leadership, is because we have so many talented MPs sitting in the House right now that are really trying to push on a lot of these progressive platforms, and trying to get a lot of the stuff, you know, accomplished. And I mean, to also name off like a few more people who have already said no. We have Megan Leslie, who, you know, lost her seat. It was kind of a very surprising loss in Halifax for her. I remember watching the elections and I was actually stunned that she had lost her seat.
Was that a firm no from her, or is it sort of like a maybe no?
It sounded like a firm no.
Seems to come up on the discussion generally.
She had talked about not really getting back into politics until 2019. So I think that we could see...
As John Dickerson says, everyone says no until they say yes.
Oh, well.
Yeah, like I think that there is an opportunity. I mean, Megan Leslie has been a huge advocate advocate on the environment, you know, even working in a senior advisor role for World Wildlife Foundation after her term. And also, you know, she has been focused on a lot of the LGBTQ issues in terms of getting transgendered equality put into human rights code. So that's been very interesting to see. Another one is Nathan Cullen. Again, he's also said no, but he's got a pretty, you know, great resume as well going for him. He is against the Unbridged Northway Gate Line. And, you know, again, another progressive policy we see within the NDP is the pushing of pipelines, which most of them we are, you know, not really for. Mm-hmm. And then Alexandre Boulouris, who, you know, an MP from Montreal, from Quebec, he's been platforming on a $15 an hour minimum wage electoral reform. And we've seen a lot of his efforts with the Canada Post issues.
There's a couple things I want to address before we run out of time. One is, I was just looking back at my notes here, and my notes only go as far back in this notebook I have here to the beginning of July. But back in July, it was like 300 days before the Conservative Leadership Convention was to begin. And already Clement, Aubry, Leach, Chong, and Bernier had all declared. And so when you say, you know, it's still over a year away, I'm like, yeah, I get that. Mm-hmm. But at the other hand, there seemed to be more... maybe more feistiness amongst the Conservatives to get somebody in place. The other thing I find perhaps curious, and perhaps you can shed some light on that, is just when the party sort of overwhelmingly said, we don't want Mulcair anymore. It was like 52 in favor of keeping him, which, you know, is granted a majority, but not a firm affirmative statement you want for a federal party leader. And so I almost feel like when the NDP cast their vote to have another leader come in, I almost felt like perhaps there was someone waiting, or at least a direction, and perhaps a couple of people who might fit. And you listed a laundry list of people who have great resumes, mm-hmm. and would be great NDP leaders, I think. But I guess where I come from on this is that it felt like the party maybe had something in mind, a direction in mind it wanted to go in.
Yeah, and I agree with that. You know, as I kind of said earlier, I think after this last election, we are, you know, as a party, still trying to establish ourselves and getting back onto the orange wave and getting ourselves, you know, situated and fighting our way through the House of Commons for a lot of these progressive issues. Mulcair was, you know, to me, and this is my personal opinion, kind of surprising. I think, you know, Mulcair has great momentum. He's been the MP for Outremont since 2008 and was actually the only NDP MP from Quebec in 2008 during Jack Layton. You know, we saw Jack Layton bring in the 103 seats in the 2011 election. So, you know, for Tom Mulcair to get 44 seats in the last election, I think that's a pretty great accomplishment. He is the only person aside from from Jack Layton who was able to bring in that many seats. And so, you know, it's two-sided. I think there was a lot of really great issues that were campaigned on. And so for me, it was kind of surprising, but I'm very excited to see, you know, what's in store for the party going forward.
You think it was maybe a little bit short-sighted? Like, maybe he should have had another shot to, you know?
You know, I think he did a great job. I think, you know, we had a lot of very progressive platforms going for us. I think I would have liked to have seen a little bit more in terms of post-secondary education. But, you know, the biggest thing, like the $15 a day daycare, I think is a wonderful thing that a lot of people really underestimated, especially in Ontario, when we look at, you know, $40, $50 a day daycare. And, you know, parents are either quitting their jobs to be a stay-at-home parent, or they are, you know, working two jobs so that they can put their child through daycare and still have money for home.
I think we'll make this the last question. But there is kind of a rift in the NDP. There is the social justice side, the more urban side, the ones who are very much behind the LEAD manifesto. But then you have the more urban or the more rural side of the party, the more working class, mm-hmm. who are very interested in things like responsible resource development. And I'm wondering how you might think that sort of divide might come out in the wash of the leadership.
Yeah, and, you know, we see this in every party, especially the Conservatives right now, as you mentioned, Kelly Leach. You know, the NDP... I see what you're saying with that. Like, for me, being, I want to kind of say, like, an environmentalist through my campaign, Plastic Free Guelph, I do agree that, you know, there are a lot of these issues that we really need to fix, that need to be. I'm a supporter of the LEAP manifesto. I think that changes need to happen immediately. I don't think that this is something that can wait anymore. But then I also understand the side of people who work in the industries and rely on these resources. You know, a lot of people do look at job security. For instance, the Alberta oil sands, you know, whereas for me, something could be, why don't we come up with a platform where we can educate and change people from an oil industry to a green energy industry? Why aren't we investing funds in educating and transitioning those jobs over and creating a new green economy that could be just as big as the oil industry? But, you know, I think every party has those two sides. We always, we have the urban votes that we get, and then we do have the rural votes that we get. And it's two very different issues, and it's also two very different cultures that you look at. And it'll be very interesting to see how that plays out in the leadership election, I think.
Yes, it will. And unfortunately, we'll have to leave that leadership conversation there. So, Shane Ward, thank you so much for coming in today and lending your insights. And we'll see you in 2017.
All right, not sooner.
If not sooner. I mean, you're around, so.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Which brings us to the other federal leadership campaign, that is the Conservative one. We finally had a debate between candidates last week, or at least 10 of them anyway.
It got a little bit chippy too, didn't it?
Chippy. What do you mean chippy?
Well, there was some shouting, of course. And
There was some chippy. Kind of...
Snippy?
Snippy, yippee. I've heard. Chippy is an expression I've never heard. But sure, we'll go with snippy.
Ask Merriam-Webster, I don't know. Yes, I made up another word.
During the break, we'll look that up. It was. And unfortunately, it seemed to come down to one candidate in particular and her full-throated support of certain orange-colored president-elects in other countries and her support of his platform.
Mm-hmm. And her burglar alarm going off, right?
Yeah, that's right, too. Of course, I have seen some cynical people online go, someone broke into your house.
Well, the part I don't get about that, and this is diverges completely from the discussion, sort of. It's like most people have a neighbor or somebody that they would send over and say, you know, is it really a break-in?
Sure.
But the best was that her campaign manager, whose name escapes me now, he's
Nick
like...
Nick Kovalis.
Yes, Kovalis, yes. He's like, this is how the left operate. What? Yes. They're going to go over and jimmy a window so her alarm goes off so she has to leave the debate in like.
And they were probably wearing
Ottawa.
Guy Fawkes masks
yes,
while doing
exactly.
it.
Yes, exactly. Yes, we have them on camera. But they keep saying, it's like left-wing media, the left-wing elite, the elites, the elitism, the establishment. It's like, guys, come on, you have to change the message. Or maybe they don't. You know what? They found, Leach and Co. have found their message. I would put Trost in the same category. I think the division is between this, we'll call them the old guard. They're not that old, by the way. I mean, this candidacy is generally youngish in terms of party leaders. Mm-hmm. So you've got the old guard, the old Harperites, we'll call them now. They can qualify as that because Harper has moved on. And then let's call them the classic guard, maybe the smaller liberal types.
Red Tories. Yeah.
I don't know if that's, I guess so. We can call them Red Tories, like Chong. Yeah. And I would put Lisa Raitt in that category.
Yeah, I would too.
So that seems to be the dividing line. I don't know. Some of them are straddling both, I think.
I think Chris Alexander could probably be in both worlds.
Yeah.
Andrew Scheer, I think, could be in both worlds.
Depending on which way the wind's blowing, probably. Right?
Blamey, though, is, I think, in the... Old guard camp. I think Trost is, too, like you said. Robin Urbach made a good point on the CBC piece that, you know, you can't really go around calling other people elites when you're a politician and a professor and an MD and an MBA, because...
And a surgeon and was on the sunshine list forever.
Yeah,
and
so you're kind of elite yourself, maybe?
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's definitely an abusive term. This doesn't even mean anyone. What do you mean by elite? I mean, if you mean the establishment, then say that. But that sounds, if you say that, it comes out as being too left-wing. I'm going to fight the establishment, man. That doesn't sound the same as like, I'm going to fight these elites with their... caviar lunches, you know, like
their kale,
that's right. All those hippie
their
elites,
Priuses,
all those hipsters. Oh my goodness,
going to their alternative rock shows.
Going to Fair November. Oh, I won't say it. Sorry, I almost said going to Fair November. Oh boy, you're fired, Hertz. Get out of the studio.
It's. I think it's too bad. I mean, first of all, it's. I don't think it's how. a lot of conservatives wanted this to go down. I think a lot of them were sick of Harper. I think a lot of them were sick of the top-down ideology stuff. I think, you know, particularly people like Michael Chong got into this race to change things up, to say, you know, I did like what he said about environmental concerns. You know, he's in favor of getting rid of green subsidies for green energy. And, you know, some people on the left might bristle at that. But he said, you know what, let's do it through carbon tax. Mm. That's the old school conservative way is trying to adjust people through, like, penalization rather than trying to what they would characterize as play favorites in a market-based system. Like, you don't want to develop your green energy industry through giving out government handouts. You want to do it the other way. You want to divert people into green energy by making it harder to be a polluter.
And that's where he got some booze.
That's where he got chippy
because he mentioned climate change, and of course Trost, we were talking about. Trost gets up,
not a real threat.
I don't believe climate change is a threat. And he's like, I think he has like a science degree, right? Like geophysics or something. Like he spent enough time in. Yeah, here's for 10 points. Does Brad Trost
just some fact checking?
BSc in geophysics. I'm pretty sure.
Keep talking.
But he's also maybe an economist as well. So, or a BA in economics. I guess that doesn't make you an economist. I don't know. So, yeah, I wouldn't say it's pretty much a free for all for now. If the endorsements that they've been getting is anything to go by, very high on the list are Andrew Scheer. This is endorsements within the party. Andrew Scheer and Aaron O'Toole are actually on the top of that list. And the people getting all the press, like Leach, she's on the bottom. In terms of an internal approval, I think is significant to a degree. I mean, it's it's a reflection of where the party is at, as opposed to where the members in general are at, because there's obviously a huge diversity of opinion across the board, as we've seen. But yeah, I was surprised at that Scheer and O'Toole were on top of that pile.
Okay, so fact check on Brad Trost. He has a BSc in geophysics and a BA in economics from the University of Saskatchewan.
Right, I win the beer. Excellent. Good.
Yes. So, I find the Leach a thing problematic. I mean, not just for the content of what she said, but also how...
Canadian values.
Well, the mea culpa moment of, you know, after, I think it was last fall when she did that Power and Politics interview where she teared up at that, you know, being used as a pawn in that barbaric cultural practices line. It's like, well, how sad can you be? Because it's you're just playing it a different way. You're, mm-hmm. you know, you're, it's the same song. You're just playing a bass rather than a piano now.
Yeah. But to be fair, I mean, they were reading the script. They were put in that position. It was Alexander, who's now in the race as well, Chris Alexander and Leach. I think if Chris Alexander hasn't denounced it outright, he's at least backpedaled and said, look, you know, I don't agree with that at all now. Whereas, you know, because they were forced to do that during the election, right? It's not as if...
Well, I don't think... Like somebody walked into a room
with their arm twisted back.
It's
like, okay,
it's like,
you're going to
get out there and you're going to do this cultural practices hotline thing.
But that was how they rolled, was that everybody stuck to the script then. Not everybody, but most people did.
They were game day players, and yes, they were given the run, and they ran with it. But, you know, this is kind of, again, the problematic part, because if you truly learned the lesson from that and the blowback from that, because I think a lot of people would credit that as perhaps the moment they lost. I mean, there are probably a lot of little reasons, of course, not the least of which was Harper fatigue, but...
Alexander Rosemary Barton going at it, that was,
yeah,
that was pretty
but,
good.
Again, same people. Mm. But if there was a moment, I would say that would probably be likely... It is that moment where they said, we are completely disregarding any subtlety in terms of where we are taking this debate. It is purely about making you afraid enough of brown people to reelect us.
Be afraid. Be very afraid. Oh, and not the brown people that are here already, of course. It's the ones that are coming over. We're coming over in the boats. They took our jobs.
Well, yeah. Presumably some brown people who are here, because who would you, you know, rat fink on to the barbaric cultural practices line if they weren't already here?
I'm often wondering what Deepak Oberoi has to say about all this, right? Has he ever commented? I don't know.
He has. does. And, and you know, I think he's been kind of very laid back about it. I think he's like a realist about his chances.
That's just Kelly being Kelly.
I like Deepak Oubre because I like his
scarf. It's very good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's styling.
Style.
He's big pimping for sure. But I think he's... When did this become
Into the ditch.
Freaking
there
People
go,
Magazine?
Right.
No,
I love your blazer.
Who are you wearing, Deepak Oubre? No,
that would be us on the carpet, right? Like, oh my god!
I do like. I can't remember what he said off the top of his head, but I did like his attitude to it, which is to like just kind of brush it off and just like this. You know, we're trying not to talk about that. We're trying not to deal with that. That's not what we want to deal with as a people, as a party. And I think that's what. He brings to this race is that kind of that cool clarity, and he I think wisely isn't getting down to the muck with her. Mm-hmm. I am sort of interested to see what will happen with Leech, because I do suspect there are a lot more conservatives who want to move forward than stay where Harper had them. It's, you know, the loss in 2015 had as much to do with Harper as it did with Justin Trudeau. And people were never too keen on Harper to begin with. We got to remember that. Like, Stephen Harper won four elections. Mm. One majority, four out of four elections.
Yeah.
And that style just rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. There are a lot of conservatives who are like, I'm a conservative. I have conservative values. I like most of Stephen Harper's policy. It's kind of weird. It's like the Hillary Clinton thing. It's like, I like this, but I just can't get past the person who's representing it.
And that's the difference here in Canada, is that you get the whole party, not just part of the package or a single person. But of course, right. And then in retrospect, it comes down to that person because we end up calling them the Harper government, even though technically that's not true. It's the choice from that period, but it's a reflection of him and his style because it was so top down, right? So, are they going to get back to a bit of more of an old fashioned party style? You know, not grand coalition necessarily. In their case, it is because you need to accommodate the people that have the certain views of marriage is between a man and a woman,
which
and
then, they of course, just took out of the
but the they're still there. Though. I think Trost is one of them, and well. It's interesting with Leech because she's a member of the LGBT community, right? Yeah. Like, she's riding a sort of weird.
You would think she would know about discrimination, but.
Yeah, you would. definitely, but it's like, it must be weird being involved in race knowing that there's somebody else at the table with you that, like, dislikes your lifestyle that much. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And doesn't want you to get married. And
there was one other development. Amy Milan and Torquil Campbell of Stars are suggesting that. If you aren't a member of the Conservative Party, if you're just like a regular Joe Schmo or perhaps are a member of the Green Party or the NDP or Liberals, and if you want to like make sure that the Conservatives don't slide backwards, that you should sign up and become a Conservative Party member.
Oh.
And apparently Dave Bagler, who was once involved with the Green Party, I think he was once Green Party leader.
Yeah, that name, yeah.
Said, let's do this. Let's everybody the Conservative Party, which... The system's rigged. Yeah, which is something I'm not sure, not a direction you want to go into.
Yeah.
But I mean, it does speak to a very big concern about, let's call it encroaching Trumpism.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, we've seen that here on campus this week. There was that story in the Tribune about the young woman who was wearing the Make America Great Again hat, and she was harassed, and somebody threw something at her.
Well, it sounds like, from what I understand, the hat just got flicked off of her head.
But. Yeah, but the reason I bring it up is because what I want to say is the Amy Millens of the world have the right idea. No matter how ineffective I think it will be, I think that's...
Stirred up.
That's more of an idea than going after the person wearing a red hat on campus.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say that out loud to everyone within the sound of the voice, since we record here on campus, that, that's not right. You know, someone may have different ideas for you. And I understand and respect. There was somebody on Facebook who put a post to it. saying like, well, how, you know, ask them how they can support someone who is as misogynistic and blatantly racist and classist as Donald Trump. And that's the key to this. Not knocking people's hats off, because I just, that entrenches people further. That if you just like inspire that kind of violence, then you automatically become more entrenched in your own opinion. Like, engage people, engage the party, engage the process. Even if you don't want to become a conservative member, by all means, like, send Kelly Leach's office a nicely worded email that you are concerned about some of her statements, or Brad Tross, or send a nice letter to Michael Chong saying, well, I like your ideas about green energy. I'm glad we have someone in the conservative party who's talking about climate change. You know, use your words. Don't knock people's hats off. Use your words.
But I completely understand why somebody could be impassioned enough to do that.
I understand.
Because I spent my lunch hour today cleaning a couple of swastikas out of the washroom downstairs. And if I find out who did that, well, we'll leave it at that.
Yikes.
Yeah.
I was trying to end it all positive, and then Scotty's like, oh, I clean swastikas all day.
That's my job. No, it wasn't all day, but I had to get rid of them, and if I find out who did it, there's going to be a problem.
Don't make Scotty clean your racist crap.
I don't know who you are.
He has a particular set of skills. He will rewire your house.
Isopropyl alcohol and rags, yeah. But anyway, let's be honest.
Anyway, we're going to have some words from our sponsors and some PSAs and then some music, and then we'll come right back to talk about more conservatives. This is Woo-hoo! Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. His life is over, hers would never be the same. Never be the same. Cops asking questions. No one seemed to know what had even happened or where'd the shooter go. They interviewed his teacher and his pastor at the church. Door to door they knocked as they widened out their search.
That was PJO, new into the station. PJO with Kay McMillan. I believe that's Peter and Kent and S. Fitzpatrick. The album's called Sunday in the Hollow, and that song was called Cops Asking Questions.
That's so local, right?
It's super local. There's very few details on the CD, actually, but...
I recognize the name Ken McMillan.
Oh, there we go. We can tell you all about PJO and his gang, but it's going to take me a minute. it's...
brought to you by...
It's local. The guy lives, like, next door. No, I don't know.
he lives in the QP office. That's weird.
I think it's possible it's almost definitely the PJO. He worked here at some point. But anyway, we'll have a whole show on PJO later.
Oh, I'm not sure we should promise that, but okay.
2020.
So there is another conservative leadership race that is of some national interest. It is taking place in Alberta. And it's kind of a big deal because, you know, Alberta was where the PCs ruled for over four decades. Leaders came and went, but there always seemed to be a PC government. That'll change last year, of course, when Rachel Notley and the NDP were ushered into office. And the Wild Rose Party became the official opposition, not the PCs. So the Progressive Conservatives are kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. They are a third-place party. There is a fairly decisive split along the right wing in Alberta. So what they really need is a hero, and his name is Jason Kenney.
We don't need another. No, actually, they do. Yeah, change the lyrics. Yeah, and it sounds like Stephen Harper has joined the Alberta PCs to sort of throw his support behind Jason Kenney.
Yeah, send out a support letter.
Not really sure whether that's going to help. Kenney, of course, is the one that wants to orchestrate the Unite the Right and get the Wild Rose on side. But it seems like there's others in the party that don't really necessarily think that that's the way
that was what was interesting in reading about this, because I must confess I haven't paid too much attention to the Alberta race until we talked about doing it for this week's show. But he's like the only one who's kind of made his party platform, his leadership platform, Unite the Right. Mm-hmm. Other members running for the leadership are, you know, if it happens, it happens. It'd be nice, but if not, we got to sort of sell ourselves on our own merits again and sort of reorganize the party. And that's why we'll bring in Donna Kennedy Glanz and Sandra Jansen, who are the two ladies, the only two ladies in the conservative leadership race. Both have excused themselves now. Sandra Jansen, in particular, noted the online harassment and the in-person harassment she got at the Red Deer convention.
Sounds like it took a turn for the nasty. Like,
yeah,
they quite literally got chased away by this. I don't know, not both of them. Instead, Jansen for sure. But
sure, yeah.
And, you know, allegedly death threats, very derogatory remarks on social media, which seems to go with the territory anywhere now. But whether it's alt-right people or not remains to be seen. But usually when it gets dragged into the ditch like
But they were of the red Tory variety. Mm-hmm. They were very socially liberal but fiscally conservative. And that seems to be where the PCs, for the most part, want to sell themselves. But in comes Kenny, and he's got the establishment backing. He's got the endorsement of the former conservative prime minister. He has got the creds from all his time in on the federal beat, Alberta Sun. He seems to, and this is what's interesting in this Rabble article I read, they compared him to Hillary Clinton. He's the Hillary Clinton of the Alberta PCs, where it's like,
that's a good comparison. Fair enough.
Yeah, there's something inevitable about him, but
the inevitable.
But a lot of people are still turned off by him personally, which is kind of a carbon copy of how people saw Hillary Clinton, where it seemed like the party was holding this door open for her that a lot of people didn't want her to walk through. A lot of people didn't like her personally, but it seemed like something that the party had to do. And I wonder if that is the fate that awaits the Alberta PCs. Like, they have to give Jason Kenney a try before.
Well, and Kenny's doing the same kind of along the lines of Leach's team, and that he's claiming that, you know, the party's being infiltrated by NDP operatives and radical activists, like that, the usual stuff, like rather just running on the merits of like, okay, here's my thing, like uniting the right in Alberta. That's a pretty big thing. You could probably just exclusively campaign on that beyond all other issues. Cause we know where he stands economically.
He's not an unknown quality.
No, he's not. Yeah, exactly. You just need to, you know, what's in the Harper playbook? We'll do that. I read a pretty glowing editorialist thing on Richard Stark, who's running. He seems a bit of an underdog. He's a vet. He's an MLA. And that, my God, the Calgary Sun loved him. It was like, he just like, this may be the guy we were waiting for. And now, you know, papers tend to do that in the opinions column. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you know, if you don't like Kenny, well, who are the options? Mm-hmm. So they liked what he was saying. It sounded like he was, you know, he sounded like a red Tory to me, talking about his particulars, about how he's involved in the community and whatnot.
Well, he said something I liked. He said they shouldn't be in the business of creating a Franken party.
Yes.
Which is a good line and sort of, again, plays against the Kenny point of view, which is like, first and foremost, we have to unite the right. The message that Stark and the others seem to be propagating is like, we have to get our own house in order. And if we can reach out to Wild Rose at some point, that's fine. But, you know, there was a Wild Rose the election before that.
Yep.
The PCs still won. So it does seem to indicate that there is some sort of significant political, cultural, ideological divide between what makes you a Wild Rose and what makes you a PC. So shouldn't the PCs know what they're going to stand for before reaching out to the Wild Rose and say, well, come and join with us?
But then there was the famous and now pretty much forgotten mass defection of the Wild Rose back in the Redford days. And was it seven total? Like, it was a lot. They moved over Daniel Smith.
Who all lost.
They all lost. So because I guess, you traitors, you're going to lose. So that's sort of forgotten. Now, as to whether they'll unite, I don't know. And is Jason Kenney to do it? The guy to do it? Maybe not. Because I guess, you know, maybe these conservatives feel like, well, if the NDP can win the government, then, you know, we could win on our own merits rather than having to have this other wing they don't necessarily like. But I think Kenny's looking at it like, what happened at the federal level with reform and the progressive conservative divided for so long, for the entire 90s, longer, right?
Yeah.
maybe he's looking at it that way. He's like, okay, if we don't unite the right, we are pretty much going to be left to roam the wilderness for longer. And who else? I didn't really see too much on the other candidates. Stephen Kahn is the only candidate from Calgary proper. Mm-hmm. He's like some kind of software magnet.
And Brian Nelson.
Brian Nelson. We say this with such confidence as if we know anybody. You know, remember Brian Nelson? He's in it. Oh, really? Yeah, we don't, you know, it's kind of thing like Alberta's front of four. We don't really know too much about them. But the thing that it bothered him, as much as I'm not a conservative, obviously, hearing about the women getting sort of run out of the race really bugged me. Like, that's
oh,
just,
yeah.
Why, like, and one of the, I guess it was a Kenny supporter, was quoted as saying, I think it was on Vice, that, you know, they were pretty much sent on the run by these alt-right a-holes. Like,
yeah.
So this is somebody from within. This is a Kenny supporter saying, look. And Kenny denounced it, obviously. He doesn't, you know, you can't endorse that.
Well, he didn't just denounce it. He's like, well, I myself have been attacked viciously online.
One of those, yeah.
You know, I mean, a fair bit of that is to be expected in politics, yeah. Of course.
That was
but
me.
I highly doubt whatever online harassment Jason Kenney got, nowhere near what Sandra Johnson got, especially from the point of view of being a woman and, you know, being shouted at by men and some of the things we've heard
female politicians have
to deal with.
Yeah.
And I don't just mean, you know, in the Alberta or
nasty
in the Alberta
woman,
region.
And it goes from there, yeah.
Oh, I mean, yep. That was probably the least of them.
Mm-hmm.
But
absolutely.
But yeah, Stephen Carter, who was on Jensen's campaign, said that Kenny was propagating a false equivalency on that.
Hmm.
That, yeah, it's, I mean, it was so bad this woman had to leave the race. And out of safety concerns. And I think that's kind of the scariest thing to come out of all this is, mm-hmm. and I say this to people who might be saying horrible things to Kelly Leach now, no matter what your political leanings are, you can't, or you shouldn't, you know, be attacking people in the harshest violent terms and in terms of death threats or other things.
You can attack her burglar alarm company, though. But
No, I mean that's wrong. If that was like an actual politically motivated thing, that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Let's again, you know, use our words, and let's, you know, try and bring some class and stability back to these proceedings. Because, you know, at the end of the day, the PCs are going to have to, this isn't just an internal thing. The PCs have to reach out to a broader audience beyond their base. They will get their base.
Mm-hmm.
The base turns out. What separates the rubber from the road is, can you make an appeal to people like you and me,
mm-hmm.
who aren't politically assigned, who, you know, might be open to a rational form of conservatism that is not ideologically driven to be against climate change and against equal rights and against immigration and these types of things. You know,
yeah.
Can we have true conservatism wherein our philosophy is to be conservative and not be conservative?
Yes, and then we'll get anywhere federally, in my view, federally or provincially with a leader like that. And it will just sort of, diverting for a second, the we're probably going to talk about the Ontario by-elections before they happen. The 19-year-old that's running for the Conservatives down.
Right.
Who is super, super right-wing and super ultra-conservative. Like, ridiculously Christian conservative.
That almost feels like performance art, though.
Yes, it does. But if he wins, it'll be, or at least comes close, it'll be like, oh, maybe we're not so far off after all.
It's difficult in by-election situations to sort of read the entrails.
18% of the electorate decided that.
Yeah. Let's get to this before time runs out.
Mm.
In Quebec, there are a number of journalists who have been surveilled by either the Quebec Provincial Police, the SQ, or the Montreal Police in the case of Le Presse journalist Denis Lessard. And if you can, I mean, Canada Land is on CFRU every Monday afternoon, I believe.
Yes.
It's
I'll fact check that.
Like, but
I've listened to it.
Denis Lessard was on Canada Land this week talking about finding out he was targeted by police, and it seemed like it was more out of the political nature of the police department. It was a politically motivated thing, because a lot of the three journalists from and Kat, I think that's how you pronounce it, the TV show.
Okay, yeah, it means...
Radio Canada.
What does it mean? It means, like, investigation.
Right, and that was rooted from the Charbonneau Commission. It named this union official as being tied up in a lot of the corruption that the Charbonneau Commission was investigating. And he complained to the police about being harassed and about basically being slandered in the Radio Canada reports, and the police investigated these three journalists. But the case of Denny Lessard, though, is that he seemed to have been targeted because he's not an investigative journalist. He's a columnist.
Mm-hmm.
But because he said a couple of, you know, perhaps untoward things about cast the police in a bad light, they seem to... for those reasons, execute a wiretap on him,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, yeah, it's not only just an invasion of his privacy, but when you're talking about journalists, you're talking about sources, you're talking about people who perhaps don't want to be identified.
Mm-hmm.
So that's makes all this, like, really triply scary. And but the scariest part of all was that this was not revealed by the police themselves. This came from, oddly enough, anonymous sources.
A source, yeah.
Yeah.
We want to know who that is, too. We want to know all the sources.
Yeah, so, I mean,
open, closed,
it makes you wonder, though, outside of any kind of control to prevent police from doing this, if now they're looking in these for the reporters' sources to find out who leaked that information about the police.
Well, and I think that was, initially, that was it. They're looking for the mole, like, who talked to Legacy and gave him the information. So they're on the hunt for that, and they just use, you know, wide privilege, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And Corderas denied it. He outright said, we never mix police and politics.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that, you know, there was a coalition of journalists and the free speech advocates, the usual people, demanding an inquiry.
The usual suspects,
yeah,
you mean?
They demanding inquiries, like, how can this happen? It sounds like they're getting the inquiry now. Like,
yeah.
It's going to happen. So they're trying to shed a light, I think is what they said on the interference, right? It's I don't know. It's one of those issues where you say, how do they get the power? How do they know to be able to do this? And yet they're just able to do it. And who's to say it hasn't been done before? It sounds like the warrant for Lagasse is being unsealed in a week or two. So mm-hmm. That will reveal more as to what was in there, what they were actually looking for. And like I said, it sounds like they were looking for the mole. But I mean, they can say anything, really. It's like, well, you know, we suspect that we were looking for some really serious criminals. But
well, it's
still
seems...
freedom of the press. Like, it's gone to court time and again, this kind of thing. It's like, where is the line drawn? It's like, we don't have to reveal your source.
There's actually no kind of...
No, there's no hard and fast. I think it's common law.
Yeah, there's no freedom of the press, I think, enshrined in terms of, like, protection of sources and that kind of thing.
But I think if somebody told a reporter, I killed 30 people and threw them in the canal in Montreal, like, you would probably go to the police, right?
So I think that's a little bit different, but I think what we're talking about
still
here is whistleblowers.
Like, potentially, it's the same that they say about religious privilege. It's like, the priest doesn't want to reveal what was said in confession kind of thing, you know?
I think it's a different standard. I'm not sure what the rules are for
there is no official
for psychologists here in Canada.
It would be your conscience, right? Yeah, or doctor patient privilege.
Because I know in some places in the States, it's if you're a psychologist and your patient confesses that they're about to commit a crime, you have to report that. But if it's someone who said, like, I killed someone in 1973, you know, mm-hmm. that's you sort of have leeway there. Yes, the danger here is, and I'm surprised that this is kind of the first time this has come up, excuse me, particularly in Quebec, where corruption is so ingrained in some of the things that go on there. You know, it's really quite sensational, as the Charbonneau Commission revealed.
I'd like to know how the president of the Quebec Federation of Labor has so much pull with the police. Like, it's not like it stemmed just from a complaint from that guy. And it's like, you know, there's always tension between labor and whatnot, but somehow there's an in somehow that he was able to...
Is it fraternity of union men, do you think?
That could be part of it. But like you were saying about the levels of corruption, I mean, maybe it's one of those, like, it goes fairly deep in Quebec, as far as we know. So.
Well, there is a one union who are pushing for more press freedom, Unifor, who represent a lot of people who work in the journalistic field, here in Ontario as well. They are calling for the stricter measures, pushing for federal and provincial attorney generals to direct crown attorneys and police that any warrants on journalists require AG approval and a panel of federal judges to review. I think that is the least that should be done, but sure. I also think that is going to be an uphill battle.
Yeah, because it sounds like the journalists they're not even sure whether they're still being monitored. So, I mean,
exactly.
If that was the case, I'd be going to the 7-Eleven and getting the burner phone, right? You would do that, right? And I guess eventually they would find that too. Like,
and a lot of journalists practice encryption, using various apps and things. But you know, perhaps you're not as diligent. Like if you're dealing like regular run of the mill stuff, perhaps you're not as diligent on encrypting your communications. But I think
we know.
that's it. Exactly. Is
dust off the teletype machine and use that or the faxes
or like doing like drop
pigeon.
Drop meets
the drop
at the, you know where you leave
the dead drop
to the, yeah dead drop dead you drop leave a note site. In the newspaper on the bench and your contact picks it up. Yeah, I mean it's scary. It's scary. Not just that they were doing it, but there seems to be like no way they could have prevented it from happening. And it just so happens that somebody at the police thought, or somebody who has knowledge of police goings on, thought that this was a bad idea and was worthy of being exposed. Good on that person, by the way. But it just seems like blind luck that we know about this, and that's kind of unacceptable. That just by sheer of somebody's conscience that. They thought spying on journalists was a bad thing and that the journalists should know about it and that the public should know about it. So
I'm not sure. Do they have whistleblower protection in Quebec?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so. I know. So I kind of feel sorry for that person if it does come out. And it's the kind of thing that it probably will come out, right?
Yes.
Once all the dots are connected and all the phones have been hacked or unhacked. But.
Well, I mean, the good thing is that the Quebec government was fairly responsive and that the opposition wanted a public debate right away. The debate happened within like days of this being unveiled, like 4 or 5 days of this being unveiled, which like in government, in government mode is like at light speed. So, I mean, it shows that.
So they're probably afraid of what was to come.
Yeah, perhaps.
Possibly, but.
Anyway.
I should just mention that Canada Land is heard on CFRU Mondays at 5 currently, so.
Nailed it.
Yeah. And Democracy Now! At 11 o'clock.
What
would a show be without us?
Way to squeeze in that shout out.
Democracy Now!
And of course, you can stay here and listen to us every Thursday at 5 p.m. But we have to wrap it up for this week's show. Programming note, we have Leanne Piper coming in, Ward 5 City Councilor, on December the 8th. And we will have Mayor Cam Guthrie in the next week on December the 15th. And I will be posting...
He's not coming now, right?
That's an inside joke. We'll be putting out the call for questions for the mayor, so watch out for that in the next couple of days. You can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com, on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, and feel free to leave your comments and questions or other requests on our Twitter feed at OS_Guelph. And as always, listen to our podcast version of this show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes. And I do believe we are still being rerun Mondays at 6 a.m. So if you're up early for work on Monday morning, you can re-listen to this show. And for me personally, you can find me at Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson. And you can go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. And I blog at a place called The Spanner Book, spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And coming up right in here at the top of the hour on CFRU is DJ Sounds Good to Me, who will be spinning some tunes here on 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and be back here Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources Guelph.